We're going to be looking at the book of Jonah for a couple of weeks, Lord willing, and we'll start that this morning. This will just be some introductory remarks. My goal is to use the book of Jonah as sort of a template, if you will, for how we can look at our circumstances and discern our relationship with God. Now, we don't always want to look at circumstances and say, oh, that's because God did this or he wants me to do that. Circumstances aren't always a good indicator. However, there is some insight we can gain from our circumstances, provided we look at our circumstances correctly. God has a certain reason for doing what he does, and we want to rethink his thoughts after him. So one of the keys as we look at any scripture, what is the mind of God out of this scripture? What is it showing us? For that's what this revelation is. It's the way God thinks, the way he acts. It's his self-revelation. I could, if you gave me a letter that I hadn't previously seen, and it was from my dad, I would be able to recognize it immediately. Maybe you would even transcribe it so that you could disguise the penmanship. But I could tell it was my dad talking. Because the way we think comes through what we say. And it's certainly true of this book. This is the inspired Word of God. And everything he says about himself here is absolutely true. These are words of absolute truth about the nature of God and the universe, and it will never, ever change. And so if you want to read about the mind of God and what he thinks, we look not only to Philippians chapter 2 and verses 1 through 11, which teaches us to have the mind of Christ in us, to think his thoughts, to think the way he thinks. The entire scripture is that. And so we're going to look at Jonah a little bit from that perspective this morning, and then look next week, Lord willing, at how Jonah could have interpreted his circumstances correctly and understood what his relationship with God, where it was really going. And isn't that what we're interested in? Where are we going in our relationship with God? Anyone interested in that? Yeah, a couple. Okay, good. Rest of you can go to sleep, and I'll just talk to the two who are interested in that. So if you have Jonah there, we are going to be reading it soon. Did I turn it off or on? Is it on now? Yep. Excuse me. So we're going to be looking at what Jonah's circumstances were telling him about his relationship with God. But as we begin that, I want you to understand that our goal is not only to understand what his circumstances were telling him, but I also want to look at two things. First, the historical context, which I think is really important when you're studying the Bible, and also the historical context. You say, well, aren't you saying the same thing? No. The reason I capitalize the second one is so you can understand history is nothing more than rethinking what God has already done. It's not about man. It's about man's relationship with God. So all of history, and you may or may not be interested in it, is actually his story. Not a fable. An account, actually in fact. And so as you read the Word, it's a revelation of His, God's, story of working with human beings. It explains the limits, explains the contexts, and we get to know God really well through here. Just like John read, appreciated those scriptures you used, John. God has given us 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 1. God has given everything we need, or verse chapter 1, verse 3. Everything we need for life and godliness through our, what's the next word? Knowledge of Him. So if you're looking at life and trying to discern where life is going, looking at the news, you're on a rabbit trail you don't want to be on. If you're using your devices to find knowledge, well, if you don't have the Bible up, then you're probably not going to find a lot of wisdom there. It's amazing how sidetracked we can get on things that will not eternally matter. So if you really want everything you need for life and godliness, it is in your knowledge of Him. So God has given us His revelation to find out about Him so we can find in Him all that we need for life and godliness. You with me? Good. Here we go. First, the historical context. Now, I know when we read the Bible, often we think of it in terms of antiquity, how long ago it was written. But that's not always the right way of understanding what was written. I can give you, and I will give you here just shortly, a couple of names of people you may be familiar with, and even you have seen pictures of, who lived at the same time of some of the people that God chose to write parts of the Bible. This is especially true when you get to what's called the only book of prophets. I won't give you the actual name because it's hard to pronounce. But there was at one time a work in the believers' community to make sure that we didn't lose any of the Old Testament prophets. The four big ones were easy to keep track of. You know, the scroll of Isaiah was about 60 feet long. I mean, it's hard to lose that. It's hard to even lug it around. But when you get to Obadiah, 21 verses, you could write that on a napkin in a restaurant. Easy to lose that one. And so the early believers were concerned about losing some of those Old Testament prophets, short but powerful. And so they grouped them all into one book, and that's the 12 that start after Daniel. So you have the big four, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and Daniel. Those are the big four. But then the rest of them are called minor prophets, not because they didn't have anything to say, but because they're usually shorter. But what they had to say was just as pertinent and powerful as what God said through the big four. So those 12, and that's the last ones, were grouped into one book, and they were carried around like one book. Their order was somewhat different than ours. The last seven, beginning with, is it Micah? Nahum? Then the last seven are in the order that we have them in the Bible, but the first five are out of order. Now, that doesn't mean the Bible is not inspired. Oh, we found a mistake because they have the order wrong. That's what we did. We put them in chapters, verses, and books the way they're assembled in our Bible. But they're sometimes out of order. Job would have been one of the earliest books. So actually, Job should be before Genesis. But that doesn't set well with the English-speaking mind, and so they're in the order in which they are. But Obadiah, the 21 verses of Obadiah, is actually the first of these last 12 minor prophets. Then comes Joel. Then comes Jonah. Then comes Amos. And then comes Hosea. And from there on, they're all in the order we have in our Bible. The only reason this is important at all, and I bring it up, is not to show you that we have the wrong order. but simply to peg a date. Jonah would have been written at exactly the same time that Homer wrote the Iliad and the Odyssey. They actually didn't live very far from each other. I'm sure they knew each other. And so while Homer was writing his Iliad, God was working with Jonah and writing the book of Jonah. Now, if you want to get to know the mind of God, and you want all things pertaining to life and godliness through our knowledge of Him, would you rather read Jonah or the Iliad and Odyssey? I mean, really, that's a no-brainer, isn't it? I want to read Jonah. I mean, just think. God coming up instantly with a personal watercraft to carry Jonah to the destination He wanted Jonah to go to. And we think we have something? All of our ingenuity? It's unbelievable. The power that God has instantly at His disposal. And so we look at these books and think of them in terms of their historical context. Other examples would be, I want to make sure I get this right because sometimes my memory fails me. Ever heard of a guy named Pythagoras? There's a theorem named after him, right, that none of us wanted to learn. But we had to learn because someday you might use that. When you're at the grocery store, really? No. That's not happening. He and Zechariah lived at the same time. Not amazing, isn't it? We somehow separate these and we put all of these Old Testament authors way back in the past, you know, when people, we think, were dragging their knuckles on the ground and dragging a club around so they could beat some unsuspecting woman on the head and drag her home. It wasn't like that. These people lived at the same time. Ever heard of Confucius? And I heard of him too, and he lived at the same time as Haggai. Plato? Yeah, I heard him too. Lived at the same time as Zechariah and Malachi. So these people that God chose through whom to speak His word were living at the same time of many of the people that we just commonly accept were very notable people of history, famous people. And we think what those famous people wrote about, well, it's so true. But I don't know about these other guys that lived at the same time and what they wrote about. We better be suspicious of that. Because after all, it's in the Bible, and we don't know if we can trust that. We're so irrational, the way we think, and influenced by our culture. So the historical context is they're writing at the same time of many people we think are famous. And we still don't always get it. Then there's historical intent. So where they have the historical context, but we have the historical intent. Now, if you have a place to write these down, I would encourage you to write them down, not because I think they are so wise and insightful, but simply because it can become a way to start thinking about what God thinks about. Now, I would assure you that He's not sitting on a throne someplace with His elbow on His knee, stroking His beard, just wondering what's going on in life. It's not like that. God is always active in revealing His will in and through the lives of people that He loves. And He shows us through these 12 prophecies what He thinks about. So if you want to know what God thinks about when He just has Himself and all of heaven surrounding Him, we find that out as we read through the prophets. these next points that I give you is what God thinks about. Now, you can prove that not because I say it, but simply because of an assignment I will give to you as you read through the Bible next year. Keep this handy and jot down the references every time you see one of these in any of the prophets, including the big four. And see how God reveals how he thinks about life. Believe me, God isn't always thinking about President Trump. He isn't thinking about how many candidates do we have now? What's it down to on the Democratic side? He doesn't spend all of his time thinking about them. He knows about them. Hears every thought that they're having, but that's not his major concern. His major concern is revealing to us what he is thinking about. That's where we want to walk, because God thinks in absolute truth. And the truth does what to us? Jesus said, sets us free. So if you want to be a free thinker, don't go to Nietzsche. Go to Jesus. Number one, God thinks about giving instructions about coming times of conflict. This is something he thinks about. Now, he's not surprised by anything that happens. That would be open theism. God thinks about instructions concerning coming times of conflict. Just think of the conflicts we got going on right now. I mean, South Korea and North Korea, that's pretty much a powder keg. India and Pakistan, they got a nuclear keg of powder. Iran has missiles blowing up on their launch pads. Just imagine if that was a nuclear warhead. We got conflicts between China and Hong Kong. We've even got conflicts between Republicans and Democrats. Imagine conflicts everywhere. If you read our news media, the very next huge conflict, World War III, as a matter of fact, is if Trump is reelected. It's amazing. All the conflicts. But what is the conflict that God gives us instructions about? The conflicts between good and evil, righteousness and unrighteousness, God and Satan. That is the conflict that we want to be privy to. So when we see all of the emphasis placed on pressuring Israel to not be a people anymore, we'll be able to recognize what conflict God is thinking about. Shirley and I, in our reading together, we read in the mornings together, and we follow the reading guide that we've published before. It's just a simple guide. We were reading, I think, last week, we were in Galatians, and we're reading the last part of Galatians, and one of the phrases is that we should be concerned about the Israel of God. In Galatians? Who would have thought? I thought it was just in the Old Testament. God will never stop thinking about Israel, and we will be wise to understand the conflicts that are associated with Satan hating Israel and God loving Israel and protecting her. Because we are going to be affected by those conflicts. Just look at the passion with which some of our elected officials, hatred they have toward the Israel of God. It's amazing what's going on. So he gives us instructions about times of conflict. He gives us insight about his power. So if you read through Jonah, what indication do you have of his power? Well, let's look at the first few sentences. Now the word of the Lord came to Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, "Arise, go to Nineveh." It is a wonder that God even takes the time to talk to any human being. But do you know he'll talk to you? Oh, Pastor, I'm not a prophet. Did I say you had to be a prophet for God to speak to you? I think God was speaking to me when I first saw Shirley. She was a campus queen. I was a nobody on campus. I was standing at the back of a 2,000-seat auditorium, our chapel, and she was going to hand her crown to the next person who would then become the spokesman, student spokesman, for our seminary and Bible college. I turn as she was welcomed into the auditorium. And it wasn't, "Here she comes, Miss America." But when she hit the end of my aisle, and I was clear in the back row Baptist, that's what I am. Now I'm going to warn you ahead of time. This is a sidebar here. I'm going to warn you that before I leave in succession, someday I am going to start preaching from here. I'm going to walk down the aisle, I'm going to pull a lectern over, and I'm going to continue preaching on the back, and I'm going to ask everyone to turn your chairs around so all of you back row Baptists can be on the front row where you should be. I've been wanting to get back at Denise for a long time. No last name so I can protect the innocent. But I got a few of my own kids to sit on the back row. How in the world does that work? Another sidebar, just for reference. I sit back there out of deference to my family. My seat would normally be up here on the front. That's where I would sit. That's where I like to sit when I was in class. That's the best place to learn is on the front row. Okay? Just letting you know, if you want to learn, really learn, sit on the front row. All right? Now, I completely forgot where we were about God's power. Here we are. God will speak to you through the Word and through other believers if they're sharing the Word. Okay? My call to ministry came when I was 10 years old and I was sitting listening to a Greek professor. I watched him write out Ephesians 5:25 in Greek on a blackboard and then proceed to preach from that text. I couldn't believe it. And it was at that moment he was explaining the concept of submission and mutual submission, verse 21, Ephesians 5, that I caught it. Whoa. You mean the Bible was not written in English? No, it wasn't. Part of it's written in Hebrew, part of it's written in Aramaic, and part of it's written in Greek. Well, which part is which? That's for you to find out. Now get to work. Kind of like that. He will speak to you. Listen, dear ones, God will speak to you if you're not pretending to listen. Do I need to say that again? As long as you pretend to listen, he's not talking. I can guarantee you one thing. If I'm sitting eating breakfast and Shirley is seated like she normally is right beside me, and she's saying something, and I'm looking against the wall picking my nose, I can tell you what, she's going to let me know that that's not the way she wants to converse. One of the most loving things you can do to any person. See how as I get older I ramble? the most loving thing you can do to people is give them eye contact when they're speaking. It's really important. It's just a sign of respect that you think they're worth being heard. And do it to your children as well as your spouse and your friends. If they're talking, everybody be quiet. We're listening to Mama. Now just listen and watch her. It's the way you show respect. God intends to speak to a heart that's listening. Don't expect Him to try to impress you, to talk you or convince you into listening. Like God has to do something special for us to wake us up so we'll listen? What is that all about? It's like a spoiled child banging on their tray in their high chair. I want, I want, I want. Mm-mm, not with God. You listen, you listen, you listen. When you're at a crossroads in life, ask for the ancient path. Walk in it. There will be a voice behind you saying, go this way. And that's the voice you want to listen to. It's the voice of the Lord. Listen carefully. And don't just pretend. You can't teach somebody who only pretends to learn. We will gain insight from God. Arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and call out against it, for their evil has come up before me. But Jonah rose to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. As if you can do that. He went down to Joppa, found a ship going to Tarshish, the furthest place he could think of to go. So he paid the fare and went down into it to go with them to Tarshish, away from the presence of the Lord. He's trying to get out of the Mediterranean Sea and hide from God. But the Lord hurled a great wind upon the sea, and there was a mighty tempest on the sea, so that the ship was threatened to break up. Verse 17, the Lord appointed a great fish. Good thing the fish was listening, right? Good thing for Jonah, the fish was listening. Have you noticed the only entity in the entirety of creation that does not listen to God is a human being? Everything else obeys His word. Even angels, good and bad. Psalm 103, the last five verses. We're the only things that don't listen to God. It says in the book of Genesis, in the beginning, God said, and 10 to the 53rd power, tons of matter showed up and asked Him, what do you want? We're the only ones that don't listen. Because we have somehow convinced ourselves we're smarter than God. He's a figment of our imagination. Brethren, it is unbelievable imagination that He would even tolerate us for a second. And we dare evaluate Him? That's not the way it works. He evaluates us, not the other way around. God appointed a great fish to swallow up Jonah. And Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights. Prophecy about what? How long Jesus was going to be in the grave. God speaking. He has incredible power. If you have trouble balancing your checkbook at the end of the month, God has the power to make what you have left go further than any way you imagined. He can do that. He does do that. It is absolutely amazing when you give God first place how much He makes out of leftovers. Third thing, informing others about approaching judgment. This is all that Jonah was given to do. Now, the city was a big city. As a matter of fact, it said it was a great city. took 3 days to walk across it. Now, if you calculate that, Nineveh was about 30 to 35 miles across and length end to end. That's about a three-day walk, about 30 miles. To put that in perspective, greater Chicago area, top to bottom, 25 miles. Top to bottom, side to side. So just a little bit larger than the Chicagoland area. And we think there were little hamlets out in the middle of nowhere. It's right at the edge of the Tigris River. Very, very large metropolis. A great city. And Jonah was given the task of tell them. It was a very simple message, and I hope this is not too colloquial for you. Turn or burn. That's the long and short of it. You're going to be judged, and it doesn't matter what you think. God is going to do it, and it's because of your sin. And it's going to happen soon. That was the message. God always informs people before he judges them. God has already begun to communicate in our country coming judgment because we have this insatiable appetite to kill babies. It is unbelievable the depths to which we have fallen. Go back and read the charters, the real charters and not the rewritten ones of Yale, Princeton, and Harvard. They originally were established to be seminaries to train pastors. They're not that no more. They're the bastions of hatred toward God. And we think we haven't fallen. We have. And we're due for judgment. And when it comes, don't be surprised what the aftermath looks like. Read about Babylon. Read about Assyria in Daniel. Read about Nineveh. All they did was dam up a creek and flooded a hole through the wall in Nineveh and went in and conquered it. Did the same thing with Babylon. God is able to do anything he wants. And he does. But it's altogether good. And it will always be to lift up Jesus. So if you want to talk about something that counts, talk about how great Jesus is. And finally, ensuring his servants' safekeeping. When God is executing his judgment, understand he does not try to hurt us. We may be caught in some of the aftermath of it, but God judges those who will not walk with him. Those who are walking with him, he preserves. So God is able, if you read what he said through Moses when he plagued Egypt to convince them to let his people go. He can keep a plague from falling on his people when they're right in the middle of Egypt. And he can do the same for us. Finally, insisting on his complete victory over evil. God has shown us time and time again, it is fruitless to fight against the Lord. So, you have a guy like Paul, the apostle, Saul at the time, traveling up to Damascus, which is the capital of Syria, is, to drag away men, women, and children back to Jerusalem to be tried, convicted, and killed for their faith. He's on the road to Damascus. He runs into God. Jesus sends a bright light down, blinds Paul, and he starts talking and confuses all the people with Paul. They don't understand what's going on. But Paul is listening, and God says this to him. Why do you kick against the goad? Remember him saying that? What's a goad? Anybody know what a goad is? Have you ever seen kids showing cattle in a cattle ring at a 4-H fair or anything? You ever seen that? They have this long stick. It's flexible. It's fiberglass. Most of them are. It has a little hook on the end. You use that to set up the cattle's feet so they're standing square, straight. It's called a goad. Sometimes you'll see them scratch underneath their brisket or scratch underneath their belly. That's to distract them so they won't get all fidgety and the judge think you don't know how to show your animal. That's a goad. And God was using goads to direct Paul. And what was Paul doing? Kicking the trash out of it. He didn't want anything to do with what God was doing. Why are you kicking against the goad, Paul? I mean, what do you say to God when he asks you that? But what it shows is this. We are really good at resisting God. But God is pretty insistent on the fact that he wins. Always. And it's up to us to show not only deference, respect, but submission to that power. Now, you say, why are you telling us this? Well, here's the reason I'm telling you this. Here's three ways that I'd like to encourage you to apply this. Number one, personally, I've already mentioned it to you. Get a piece of paper, a tablet of paper, maybe a spiral bound or something where you can put different sections in and title all five sections one of these points. Just write it down, top of the page. He insists on his complete victory. And as you're reading through the Bible, and one of those points comes up, write down the reference. This is for your own personal growth in your spirit, in your knowledge of God. Say, well, what good will that do? Well, let me explain it like this. Can you tell me what you ate a year ago today? Anybody? Nobody can? Any takers? I got a $50 bill if you can tell me what the menu was a year ago today. No guessing. God knows. See, you don't know. Here's my question. Did it do you more good than you realized? Yeah, because it kept you alive. The Word of God is more powerful to us than just food. When it goes in, it starts working not on our body, though there's some really good medical advice in this book. Not only our soul, great way to think if you think this way, but your spirit. It will change and nourish your spirit. If you're bored at church, I used to be bored at church. Anybody join me? Be honest. God already knows. Yeah, a few of you are honest enough to admit it. I admit it. Let me tell you something. You understand what this book is, and you start reading it from this perspective, you won't be bored anymore because God will be speaking right to your heart. Dear ones, I got to say this. If you're more excited about the score on the last game you did on your device, you have a lot to learn about the power of God. And you better not judge him on insufficient evidence in your heart. You better start getting to know him. I encourage you to put the device down and pick up Divine Talk. That's what I would suggest. And I would learn and memorize as much of it as you can because it ministers to you. So write all of these things down. Now for your family. We're going to switch from a person to a family. I am so proud of all of the women in this church who have taken it upon themselves to train their children at home. I am so proud of that. You will not find a more difficult task than that. Satan will fight you every step of the way because he intends through other systems of learning to corrupt your children so that three-year-olds who are the next to be drawn in will be taught that they can change their gender. Imagine the spiritual, soul, and physical mutilation that is going on in our country trying to turn back what God has chosen. Read Nahum chapter 1, verses 9 and 10, and find out what God thinks when you try to change nature to fit you. We are irrational. I could stand, and I have done this before just to prove it to adults, I can stand in front of a group of little children and get them going with me. Okay, do you like applesauce? Do you like, oh, we love applesauce. Do you like bread? Oh, we love bread. I can get them going, and I can say this. How many like monkey manure? Oh, we love monkey manure. I've done it. They don't even know what they're saying. How can they make a rational decision about who they are? Who God has made them? Get out of the way and let God have his children. But ladies, I am so proud. When I lay my head down, I am so thankful that you have chosen to take primary responsibility for training your little ones. And other parents who are being vigilant to make sure that the teaching that is done correctly. It's getting very difficult to stand in our culture against the waves. But aren't we told to do that? Stand fast, immovable. So mothers, if God is going to come up with some steadfast, unmovable people, don't you want some strong-willed children? We complain about being strong-willed. Hey, I want strong-willed children. I just want them malleable by the Word of God. And you get that in there, and then you lock your knees, and you refuse to be moved from the absolute truth. You defy anyone who tries to tell you this is not true. I don't say that militantly. I say it passionately, though. You better get the word in. And you want your children to stand against any onslaught from the enemy. That means they're going to challenge you to make sure what you're saying is true. So get it in yourself. And then don't be afraid to stand with your children against the tide of corruption that's in our culture. Steadfast, unmovable. So with your children, go through these when you find them. Hey, kiddos, I got a dollar bill. Just lay it on the table. I got a dollar bill. If you can find any place in the Bible that shows the power of God, and let them search. And be willing to give it to them. Get them one of those little tokens that you get from Culver's. Hey, we'll go to Culver's when you find something great about God. Let them search. And it's not wrong to challenge them. But please ensure with them as you're going through these conflicts that are going to be coming, you have to talk about those things. Things are not always going to be, you know, skip to the bank, get our check, go have fun, eat out, and all is well. I'm going to get a fast car soon. That's not life. Talk to them about the conflicts that are coming and how to be prepared for them, but assure them of God's power and his sustaining power to save them. From the time I was old enough to climb up on the back of an F-20 International tractor and ride with my dad plowing, he was telling me stories about the power of God. I got it. And when I needed it, it was already there. And I could count on it. And then apply one the last time. With your friends, you don't have to be preachy at the water fountain at work? You don't. You can do this. Hey, Joe, where do you think the next war will break out in the world? See, you've just talked about coming times of conflict. Do they know? Yeah, if Trump gets elected, Antifa's going to be running wild. So? What do you mean, so? Well, what then? What happens then? You just ask a series of questions that make them think about what they're not thinking about, or they're thinking wrong about. So what if Trump is reelected? So what if, what's her first name? The Warren lady. Elizabeth Warren is elected. Bernie Sanders, oh, I'm moving somewhere if he's elected. That guy is out of his gourd. This isn't political. I'm not talking politically to you. I mean, there are some whacked out people out there. Oh, what then? Hey, Bernie wants your money. He's not going to give you any of his. He wants yours. But hasn't he said publicly, I can do better with your money than you can. Want to bet? I won't use it to kill babies. Will you? Then you got a problem with God, pal. And it doesn't take a religious zealot to thump a Bible, flip some pages, and convince. Just ask questions to make people think. And do that with your kids. So, you think having a bank account is a big deal, huh? Next to sliced bread? Well, what then? Always making people think about what's coming. What's coming? What's coming? What's coming is Jesus. Right? I mean, he's coming. And you're not going to stop him. And you don't know the day and the moment it's going to happen. But God does. And he's trying to prepare us by telling us, think about these things. That's all he did with Jonah. He just took Jonah through thinking about these things. And that was his life experience. If you look back on your life, you will already be able to see God dealing with you in one of these five areas. You will already be able to see it. Because this is what he thinks about. So he's sitting across the table. It's been a while since you've had a date with your wife. I remember going to Springfield. We were in our first church in Beardstown. A lot going on. And I took her to eat supper in Springfield, sat across the table from her, and I looked at her when we were eating supper, and I had forgotten the shade of blue of her eyes. That's a bad deal if you can't remember the shade of blue of your wife's eyes. Too busy, man. Back off. I didn't. So God moved us to another church. And I still didn't back off. So I moved us out of that church until I got it. Okay, now I'll let you start again. And that's why we're here. I know the color of my wife's eyes. So you're sitting across from your wife. Hey, baby. What has God said to you in your prayers lately about his power? If you can't answer that, you need to be reading and talking. And it's not unfair to ask that question to your spouse. What's God teaching you right now through what you're reading? How's God leading you? Dear ones, when we face God face to face in judgment, he is still going to be thinking the same thing he's thinking today. And he's still going to be urging on us the truth that comes from that thinking. Don't we want to get ahead of the curve on that examination? Don't we want to learn it now? Let's do. Because it's one of the most fascinating pilgrimages you can ever get on. I was talking with Earl Smith this week, and we were just reminiscing, and he was old, and he's getting older. If you go see him, Heritage House in Portage, he They've moved him to room 26. He was in 1. The roof fell in there, so moved him to 14, and now he's in 26. We were just reminiscing. I said, Earl, after we talked and chatted and laughed, I said, Earl, what can we do for you? And he said, can you turn the calendar back 80 years? No, I can't do that. I'm not sure I want to go back. But if I think back, there's some extraordinary gifts that God has given us through His mercy and His kind power. So, you wondered what I was thinking. Shirley comes through the door, right? You forgot. You thought, I forgot to tell you. God talking. No, I remember. See, my short-term memory, but man, I can remember 60 years ago. Anyway, she walks through the door. She's being escorted by a man by the name of Mark Laura. Now, Mark Laura was a precursor to the bearded guys in Louisiana, Duck Dynasty. He was a precursor. Long beard, bushy sideburns, hair down to his shoulders. And my first thought was, man, she's too good for him. How did I know that? I didn't know that. Mark was a fine guy, you know. When you talked to him, you had to make sure and watch his feet to see if his toes were wiggling, to see if he was listening to you. But I got along okay with Mark. But I thought, there is a fine woman. She was very pretty. I mean, Shirley's still very, very lovely. And she walked up front, sat down, and she was first one to speak. And she started speaking about the importance of loving your family and serving the Lord. I was hooked. There is a woman. God spoke to me and said, there is a woman. And I pursued her. And once I really met her, didn't take me long to get this figured out. You better get to moving, because there's 800 other preachers here, most of whom are unmarried and unattached. She's the one. He speaks to me. He speaks to you, if you're listening. Don't judge the preacher. Don't judge the worship service. Don't evaluate the people in the church. Listen for God. Wherever you are, listen for God. Because He's talking. He'll let you know what His mind is. And if you want to get to know Him, you better start sooner rather than later.